the free fall speed, virtual free fall speed, we have the symmetry of these collapses. You didn't see toppling, which is what would happen in an uncontrolled. We have the pulverized concrete in the dust. We have the tiny stack that was widely observed by the experts. Couldn't believe how small the stack was. We have photographic evidence and video evidence of these rows of small explosions along floors. We have a huge amount of eyewitness testimony that there were explosions in the building. We have the seismic evidence. Some people challenge that, but you know, Columbia University's seismographs record Richter scale explosions. Earthquake type magnitudes of 2.2. We have the molten steel or liquid steel at the base. CDI, the Controlled Demolition Inc. Explosives firm, was in charge of that, and they all testify. Yeah, there were, for weeks and weeks there was they kept dousing it with water, but these hot spots couldn't be cooled for weeks. We have, of course, then the cover up. There's other physical evidence. Actually, it's the physical impossibility to the official story that might be the most important thing.
That was the voice of Morgan Reynolds, who was chief economist in the Department of Labor during George W. Bush's first term. According to Reynolds, that forensic evidence proves beyond a reasonable doubt that professional demolition brought down all three New York World Trade Center buildings that fell on September the 11th, 2001. That includes not only the famous 110-story North and South Towers that fell in the morning, but also World Trade Center 7. WTC 7 was a 50-story office building two blocks away that was not hit by an airplane or any shrapnel and fell into its own footprint at 5:22 p.m. that afternoon. Dr. Reynolds will be speaking in Portland, including question and answer, at the Downtown Central Library next Saturday, September 10th at 1 p.m. That appearance is free and open to the public. There is more bio information on Morgan Reynolds at the end of this audio stream. I'm Glenn Owen from KBOO News. We now join Professor Reynolds in an interview by KBOO's Eduardo de Landeros Thierry that was recorded from a live broadcast at 10 a.m. on Friday, September 2nd, 2005.
All of these things point to controlled demolition.
Let's backtrack a little bit for the benefit of some people. The 911 Commission's findings on the collapse of the World Trade Center, can you bring us a brief overview on
they didn't do anything serious. FEMA and NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, have these physical engineering studies. The NIST study is due in final form this month, and I've seen the preliminary. But the commission you referred to is kind of interesting in that on page 305 of the commission report, they just state matter-of-factly in a sentence that the South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds. Well, that's a slight exaggeration, really, but nearly 10 seconds. But what they don't realize or didn't realize at the time is what this implies. How can you get a free fall, virtual free fall collapse of these 110-story, you know, 1,360-foot-high structures that are incredible? They weigh 500,000 tons, a half a million tons of steel. There was just awesome. And so here they are kind of indirectly admitting that this wasn't a gravity-driven pancake collapse. Well, that isn't what we saw. You look at any film of these towers, and you just can't help but be impressed by the explosive energy. And then here's a fact. The commission just basically ignored 99% of the unpleasant facts that didn't fit their fantasy theory. You know, I call it ONI, Osama and 19 Islamic extremists. You know, the whole hijacking story and how these planes, with their impact and subsequent fire, brought down these buildings, which is, it's just flat out absurd. And now a lot of people believe it, either because they haven't thought about it or they're in denial, I would say. They're not open to a rational assessment of which hypothesis has the evidence in its favor.
When this devastation took place, when you first saw it, what was going through your mind in terms of?
I had actually started on the job as chief economist, two blocks from the U.S. Capitol on Constitution Avenue, and was in my office, and I got an email from my son in Kansas City, "Are you getting out?" I said, "What is he talking about?" And I went two doors away to a colleague who had the television on, and I saw a tower on fire, and the first thing out of my mouth was, "That building will not fall." Now, I spent the rest of the morning virtually getting home across the Potomac in Alexandria, Virginia, but of course, we were all amazed, expert and amateur alike, that these buildings came down. And I said, gee, how wrong could I have been? And I put it on the back shelf. I didn't, for the next 16 months while I was on the job there, I saw policy going ways I did not favor, and they really weren't listening to me. And so I'd really had it, overstayed my welcome, you might say, at least from my point of view. And then I retired at age 60. But then, of course, now that I'm, we'll call it semi-retired, I've got all time on my hands to do what I want to do. And I began looking at this and very carefully. And two things were important to me driving me along this path. One was the invasion of Iraq, which I knew was based on big-time lies, and now very many people know it. And I said, gee, if they're going to lie big-time about that, what about 9/11? And then the next year, 2004, Dr. David Ray Griffin's book called The New Pearl Harbor came out, and I did a review essay on that, and I was very impressed with he's a very careful and scholarly man and of the highest integrity. I admire him greatly, and that was very important in whetting my interest in this whole thing, because it's so very important, and the consequences flow from 9/11 every day.
So let me just go a little bit into the early stages of you coming to terms with the WT, the World Trade Center disaster.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing these buildings come down. I mean, are you suddenly saying, okay, what's wrong with this picture literally? And then, and if so, what got you started?
I just left this as an unsolved puzzle. I believed the conventional account for quite a while till I left government service, and that might sound convenient, but that's the way it happened. It's only when I began investigating this thing, I just saw so many things wrong with the whole Bush-Cheney administration, especially the war in Iraq. And then this all traces back to they could have never done this, of course, without the pretext of 9/11. So, and there's a great book. The more I learn, the more obvious it becomes. Right? The first duty of a scientist, it said, is to point out the obvious, and now I'm armed to do that. There's a great book by Webster G. Tarpley that's out now called 9/11 Synthetic Terror. And what the great virtue of his book is that he puts 9/11 in context, because what we find is that there's just been this huge history of governments staging a pretext to war, or the intelligence services creating like the Red Brigades in Europe in the early 1980s. And then it's just like us, the CIA, creating Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda in the 1980s as a vehicle to help bring down the Soviet Union in Afghanistan, or saying that Saddam Hussein is our friend because he's the enemy of Iran, and on and on. And here's one of the almost amusing, if tragic, versions of it, was that Hitler in 1939 knew that German public opinion really wasn't behind him to invade Poland. So they staged this event where they marched prisoners over to a radio station near the Polish line, and they machine gunned them to death. They were in Polish military uniforms, and then they arranged these bodies as if they'd seized this radio station as a part of an invasion or violating the territorial integrity of Germany. But isn't that, you know, it's just preposterous. Now we've got far more elaborate things. 9/11 was audacious. I mean, just bold, incredibly bold.
Okay. For the benefit of, for my own curiosity anyway, I guess the tendency would be to dismiss this, especially the allegation that this was a controlled demolition. So I guess I want to ask you, run through me your evidence for this, as you say, controlled demolition. Well, that's pretty
well
out there.
We have the free fall speed, virtual free fall speed. We have the symmetry of these collapses. You didn't see toppling, which is what would happen in an uncontrolled. We have the pulverized concrete into dust. We have the tiny stack that was widely observed by the experts. Couldn't believe how small the stack was. We have photographic evidence and video evidence of these rows of small explosions along floors. We have a huge amount of eyewitness testimony that there were explosions in the building. We have the seismic evidence. Some people challenge that, but the Columbia University's seismographs record Richter scale explosions, earthquake type magnitudes of 2.2. We have the molten steel or liquid steel at the base. CDI, the Controlled Demolition Inc., explosives firm, was in charge of that. And they all testify. Yeah, there were, for weeks and weeks, there was. They kept dousing it with water, but these hot spots couldn't be cooled for weeks. We have, of course, then the cover up. There's other physical evidence. Actually, it's the physical impossibility to the official story that might be the most important thing. We have FEMA was positioned, which was the primary agency to destroy the evidence. This is a crime scene, and it's a felony crime, of course, to destroy evidence on a crime scene, which they did rapidly as they could. The main thing there was to cover up so that you couldn't, objective parties couldn't test the steel girders for explosive residue. So I'll stop there, but we've got a whole bunch of stuff there.
Right. This controlled demolition, do you have any thoughts about who might have done this?
Well, as I say in the June 9th article that brought this attention on me, it would require weeks to do it. That means you'd have to have access to these buildings, and that would mean complicity on the part of building security. So you can't imagine a ragtag band like the accused hijackers or similar talentless people doing this. So it's going to require it quickly leads right into the White House. And in terms of, there are people that are called patsies. That's the 19 hijackers. There are moles. Those are inside the government. And then there are professional killers, many of whom are outside the government. And there's probably some of the foreign intelligence services involved, too. like MI6, MI5, Mossad. So there's a this really requires much further investigation, of course, where I don't have the kind of smoking gun evidence here that we do for the demolition or the in effect DOD, NORAD, FAA stand down, which was extraordinary on that day, etc. We don't have that kind of Trump-type proof that we do for just the physical facts here of 9/11.
Are you making any type of alliances so that you can take your message, your findings, mm-hmm. to a further step so that more people, more of America, so to speak, can become aware of this?
That's kind of a yes and no. I mean, I am in contact with other people like Dr. Griffin that I mentioned, and Jimmy Walter, the California millionaire, multimillionaire who's living overseas, and he's spending a good deal of his wealth running ads. And there's the 9/11 truth.org. I went to Washington, D.C. here at the end of July to participate in this truth event, 9/11, upon the first anniversary of the 9/11 Commission Report, July 22nd. So, and I'm doing interviews like this and so on. But I'm not primarily an activist here and an entrepreneur or promoter. That's the role of others. I am primarily a researcher, okay? I'm still investigating because it's a complex set of crimes, and our knowledge base is growing week by week, but there's still controversial areas.
Has any type of investigative body or agency made contact with you, i.e.?
There is no, people, the 9/11 truth movement presented these petitions to Elliot Spitzer, the Attorney General of New York State, but he's busy getting famous on Martha Stewart crackdowns, but the Wall Street and steroid scandals and the like, and he's That's a fruitless ambition. Actually, the Attorney General of New Jersey, any Attorney General who state citizens lost their lives in New York, could in principle form such an investigatory body. But counting on the state, local, or much less the federal law enforcement, criminal justice apparatus to move here is. Most unlikely. Remember, we had Jim Garrison, the New Orleans district attorney, and investigate in the JFK assassination. So this could happen, but it's very unlikely. And so, I think the way that this is going to fall apart, and we're going to break it wide open, would be that all of this, this body of information, this knowledge that's been created post 9/11. Mostly on the internet, but in books, that's been sealed off from the mainstream media, is going to there's going to be some holes in the dike, and those will rapidly grow. And then, since we've got such a nice body of knowledge gained already, it's going to there are going to be new questions, new pressures, political pressures that will lead to it'll. It's like the war in Iraq. You know, as things go badly, the popularity of the war erodes. So here's a recent breakthrough. Dr. David Ray Griffin, was just interviewed by the L.A. Times, and they ran that interview in their weekly magazine. So that's mainstream. To sum up, we can't rely on the public sector to prosecute, to bring charges and indictments before grand juries. I'm not optimistic about it. That instead, the mainstream media is going to ultimately play a a powerful role there. A lot of them in, I've talked to a number of them, and privately, I was interviewed by ABC News, an ABC News researcher, privately, and as an example, and a lot of them know what I know or something close to it. And the corporate media, you kind of the Big Ten, of course, won't allow this to penetrate there. But one of these days, it's going to.
One last thing. I was wondering if you know, are aware of the grand jury, Illinois grand jury.
Oh, yeah, with Bulldog Fitzgerald.
Yes. Can you comment briefly on
that? In Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't have any solid information about that. Some people pin hopes on that. You know, the pursuit of some of the neocon traitors in the Pentagon, that's promising on its own. You never know where it's going to lead or what they've got. And I don't know either. Supposedly, he has strong powers. He has the powers of the Attorney General at the Department of Justice. And if they were to try to fire him, that would be difficult politically. So we'll just have to see. I don't know enough about the man to trust him, and I'm a little leery or suspicious, but if something truthful and comes out of it and the pursuit of justice, wow, more power to him.
Well, thank you. We're at our end of our time here, Mr. Morgan Reynolds. You're going to be coming to Portland on September 10th at our beautiful downtown Main Library at 801
right.
Southwest 10th.
Well, that afternoon.
Right, Saturday.
I'll be there, and I'm looking forward to visiting your beautiful city.
That would be Saturday, 1 p.m., September 10th. And once again, thank you.
Thank you, Eduardo.
I was speaking with Morgan Reynolds. He was the former chief economist for the Department of Labor during President George W. Bush's first term. And I'm Eduardo de Landeros Tierra.
In addition to his past service to the George W. Bush administration, Professor Reynolds is author or co-author of 6 books and has written dozens of op-eds for Newsweek, The Wall Street Journal, Investor's Business Daily, Fortune, and The National Review. He has testified before congressional committees and appeared on television and radio news programs, including The News Hour with Jim Lehrer, PBS Debates, CNN, and Fox News. In 1993-94, Reynolds was visiting scholar at the Joint Economic Committee of the U.S. Congress. He has been with the Cato Institute and is currently an adjunct scholar with the Ludwig von Mises Institute. I'm Glenn Owen, Cable News.